Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest, I absolutely love. I love him. I consider him one of the pioneers, one of the pioneers of leadership, one of the pioneer leaders, one of the catalysts, I like to say, of that hashtag leadership matters. And it is an absolute honor to have Dr. Neil Gupta, who is the proud superintendent of Oakwood Schools in Oakwood, Ohio. He is also one of the facilitators for the Principal Leadership Institute for DA, a new program that just started this year that we are going to expand upon. But I am humbled to have my man, as I call it in the Denzel voice, Dr. Neil Gupta. Doc, what's up, my man?
It is awesome. It is great. I just actually came back from a district administration summit last week. And I'll tell you, I am rejuvenated. I'm on cloud nine right now. I know we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but it's real. The work that they're doing is real. And they're a benefit to all educators who across, I'll say, the United States right now, but possibly knowing where Amy might go, it could be across the world, you know, eventually.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll tell you this, Neil, the participants in your principal leadership cohort is very lucky. Not only to have the leadership of Amy and the group of DA, but you as one of the core facilitators. I like to say the leadership return of investment on investment just by participating in that and having you unwrap the leadership concepts and the theories and practice in action. Just absolutely amazing. And again, like I said, the leadership return on investment for them is just exponential. But yes, I get to geek out with you for about an hour. I think that's awesome, Doc. What about you?
Wait, let's do it. Wait a waking for the morning for me.
Listen, we got our coffee in here. We're going to have a geek out session before you head to Oakwood, but so glad that you were able to make time for us.
I'm already there. This is my office.
Oh, listen.
This is my office.
Okay. Look, I'll tell you this to my participants and to my viewers on VFB. Look at that background as an office. I want to be like you when I grow up.
That's not virtual. That's not a virtual background. So Oakwood is a beautiful community. We'll talk about this, I'm sure, more throughout this hour. It's a house. The city owns the house. The district pays to rent it. And but I'm in the enclosed patio is my office, which is great. That direction right there is how I get out of my office, but it leads into a family room. But if there's a meeting going on in that family room, I'm stuck unless I go out one of these side doors right here. But it's lovely. I'll take all of it for this natural light.
Absolutely. Hey, to my audience out there, that is not AI generated. But Neil, we can talk all day. Dr. Gupta, we can talk all day. Like, it's so good to see you. So good to have you on. But I want to get into the first question because, again, this is a fun question. And like I said, I love asking this question because it really gets to know the leaders on a semi or a quasi-personal level. But leaders across the country know who you are. They engage with you. I mean, you are a keynoter. You do amazing workshops. You're leading the Principals Academy at the district administration. But when you're superintendent of schools as well for Oakwood, when your constituents, when your students, when leaders across America, when they engage in a session with you or with just a conversation like we're having, what is your excellence song that defines your work in the education ecosystem?
Yeah, so it's probably the same song that I was blasting in my car when I was in high school, driving up and down the streets with all my windows open. It's still my favorite song today. And there's, don't listen to all the words in the whole song as if it were had anything all to do with education. But Jesus Jones back in the day had a song called "Right Here, Right Now," and mm-hmm. There's no place I'd rather be. There's no better place I'd rather be. And I think that we have to be in that place of positivity, not being just naive, but be in that place of positivity of, you know, there will be troubles that come along, but I'd rather be right here, right now. And this is kind of that time for such a time as this that I'm going to make some significant changes, and I'm going to take it with positivity. I'm going to leave people inspired, and I'm going to tackle it head on with energy and gusto of what's doing what's best for our students. And so to me, that's a hype song sort of thing. I want the same thing to happen, you know, when people meet me, and then when they leave, that lasting impression of there's a man with hope right there, and we're dispensing that hope out across the rest of our educators, our community, our students. Want that to be the song.
Absolutely. And Dr. Gupta, I want to expand on that, right? Because one of the, I like to say, implicit meta themes that you highlighted on, that it just exemplifies your leadership, right? You exude how you build capacity, how you build synergy among your stakeholders to be able to elevate that transformation right here, right now. And that emphasis of positivity. I love that, because when you said yes, you didn't negate that there's going to be significant changes that's going to occur, right? But you said it in this correlation manner that we're going to be positive about it. We're going to be inspired, and there's going to be significant hope to make these exponential and these huge, radical, transformative changes within the district. I always like to say you're looking at culture to be able to address strategy. We always say that culture eats strategy, and the way you're addressing it is just purely natural leadership. And that is where transformation, where reauthorization, that's how that becomes accelerated within the process. But again, during the course of your year, career, I want to highlight that leadership matters, and it goes right back to your first answer. But we have to be able to look at how we authentically change student outcomes. And we know that leadership is a major predictor of the impact of student outcomes. But you, as one of the facilitators for the Principals Leadership Academy at the DA, first, I want you to unpack that from a broad implication standpoint with regards to effective school leadership. What does that look like? If you can get that down to its isolated threads and reconstruct it into this kind of like this theory into practice model for our viewers and for our listeners today. And then second, if you can unwrap the importance of strong leadership development programs, such as the one that you're facilitating at DA, how can we create strong leadership development programs for sustained leadership in our schools and learning organizations today?
Great. That's great. I think early on, and maybe this was just where I made my mistakes in my career, but I guess I go from this premise. There's an African proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. Mm-hmm. If you want to go far, go together. And, you know, maybe, like I said, it's just me, and I'm kind of reliving that proverb in my own life. But I got to where I am, I think, early on, thinking that I had to be the leader that has all the answers. And, you know, when you get that connotation of trailblazer, it could be a good thing and it could be a bad thing. You could go out so fast and so far out front because you're trying to make a name for yourself, or you're trying to do things, you know, that are just so innovative. The problem is if you stop and turn around and nobody's following you, who cares? And so it's this idea about your leadership effectiveness is based on how well you bring your team and your community and your students and your staff along with you in that journey, even at the risk of speed. It's about capacity building. It's about making sure that we do that. And then how that happens is, to be honest with you, it happens through relationships. And yeah. I think that sometimes we get so caught up in so many strategies. You talked about that with Drucker's quote of, you know, this idea that we've got to, you know, I got to do all these things. I have to do these things that I need to do. All these things need to get done. And especially as a young or aspiring administrator, or in whatever capacity a person is, they always are tending to get stressed over the things. And there's a large pause moment of settle your heart down. It's all about relationships first. So first of all, how are people feeling with that change that's going to happen? How have you cast and created a shared vision of what's going to take place? And how have you relied on people to co-create, I guess, what that action plan is going to be, sort of thing that you are going to help. You know, sometimes I've had to learn that I'm not even fostering the leadership. I'm facilitating the leadership, and I'm trying to elevate the voices, especially of the people maybe that are a little bit quiet, but yet are strong leaders. And then, so my job isn't to lead. My job is to help elevate their voice. So relationships is number one. And then the second part, I would say, is just this idea about thinking about like that idea of systems thinking of in that change process, you've got to think about the culture. And Kurt Lewin talks about this of we tend to think about the change that needs to take place, but there's an unfreezing. He has this metaphor of water sort of thing. And he talks about that you got to unfreeze first, you got to change, and then you've got to refreeze later. And we tend to think about the change process, and then we wonder 6 months later or a year later, why are we feeling stuck? Well, the unfreeze process is this idea about really helping to validate the need for the change. How do people start thinking differently about, you know, what that might look like? How are they feeling about the change? Do they even have an understanding of what that's going to look like or a reason why it should happen? Those factors need to be taken into consideration. The change needs to take place. And then this refreezing means, how do we like embed it into the culture? It becomes our new culture. It becomes the way we do things here. What we tend to do is we create the change and then we move on to the next thing. And right. Then we wonder later on versus now, how do we come back and debrief about it, making sure that we've got champions that are going to continue to sustain that change and believe in that change over time. And that really comes to this idea about compliance versus commitment. Have we built commitments or are we just building compliance? And if we build compliance, that's where things are going to fail. So really, I would say this change process starts to really take place. And I see that through my leadership and how I structure and work with our team, but then also how I see future aspiring administrators and especially through district administration.
Yeah, Dr. Gupta, well stated. And to my viewers and to my audience out there, please use Dr. Gupta's answer for this question. Rewind it. Take it apart, because there are various elements of leadership strategies as well as systems application that you can be able to cogitate with your team to think about on where your process is. That is, Dr. Gupta, we use this as an asynchronous mechanism for professional learning, self-directed learning for the educators that view and listen to VFE. But what I loved about this, right, and my viewers, take this apart with me because we're going to deconstruct this. First, Dr. Gupta started out with relationships. If you think about a previous guest that we had, Dr. Bill Daggett, when he had the traditional rigor, relevance, relationships, and then he switched it to be relationships, relevance, and rigor, Dr. Gupta gave a nice synergistic answer that is aligned to relationships, relevance, and rigor. When you think about relationships start first, that shared vision, co-creation, co-designing, and we're going to get into that with your strategic plan that you're developing at Oakwood. But then this process of systems thinking where we unfreeze, I love it, unfreeze to refreeze. I love the example, but you're validating that yes, we have to be able to co-create this shared vision, this shared mental model, but incorporating, or I should say, this parallelization between relationships and systems thinking is amazing. And the leadership effectiveness, the leadership strategies to go through those steps within the change management process. I love it. You use this measure of compliance versus commitment. I love that. I love that, Dr. Gupta. Well stated. With that, again, to my viewers, please rewind that so you can be able to identify those strategies in an isolated manner. But again, talking about that co-creation, talking about that shared vision, I tell you, Dr. Gupta, on social media, I see the process, right? And I'm thinking about this from my executive leadership superintendent lens. You're going through the process of including all voices, the agency of every single one of your stakeholders and constituent groups in Oakwood. Love it. Just became the superintendent of schools at Oakwood Schools in Oakwood, Ohio. And that process of developing your strategic plan of including the voices is absolutely admirable, Dr. Gupta. But from the cursory vision that you are the initial constructs of your strategic plan, what you're hearing from a qualitative and anecdotal standpoint, how are you planning to leverage innovation and creativity to meet the needs of all in your learning organization? Specifically, as we know, Dr. Gupta, we're educating Generation Z and Generation Alpha, who are the antithesis of us old people, as we can say.
Take it. Listen, I'm old. I'll take it. You know, yeah, it's interesting because we're going through the strategic planning process, and one of the things that you have to make sure is that first of all, it's our community's vision. You know, one of the things that I really was worried about was, and this happened during my interview, I was being interviewed, and one of the questions was, "What's your vision for Oakwood Schools?" And you have that split second to think about what your answer going to be. My answer was, I don't have a vision. I said, you should be actually scared if I have a vision, because I haven't even stepped foot here. If I come in here with if I gave you an answer today, then I'm giving you an outsider's vision to your community based on my experiences and work in other districts. You can't copy paste vision from one district or community to another. The DNA of this community is different. And it seemed to have worked. I'm not saying that was the reason I got the job, but I think it was a good answer. And so the funny thing is in August, September, and October, the first 3 months of my job here, I kept getting asked that question and they kept using that answer. One of my administrators pulled me aside and said, you can't keep using that excuse forever. So how are you going to turn the corner? And I said, we're going to create a shared vision together. So the shared vision is multi-pronged. You talked about the idea about qualitative, but it's also multi-pronged. So, you know, there's times where there's two-way feedback, then there's one-way feedback that's happening, one-way information that's being shared. So, in January launched community coffees. I do monthly community coffees, show up at the community center in town, not one of our school buildings, not our district office. So I'm lugging coffee. My administrative assistant and our communications director comes with me. They're awesome because we've got to set everything up, but it's worth it. You know, if it would be a lot easier if it was just out right here in our district office. But I wanted our community to see that I wasn't, you know, like you're coming on my turf sort of thing, but let's meet at a neutral site. And if you have questions, you know, feel free to stop in and ask, and we can kind of go from there. And we've seen numbers increase, and we've seen some engagement happen in a very thoughtful and great way. So that's been really good. We've also put out some information about a quality profile in the state of Ohio. That's not unique. But we did mail it home. We found out that about 60% of our community are empty nesters, or they don't have kids in the school system. So me pushing out emails and me putting things out on social media may not get to them. And so a mechanism of making sure that we're engaging all of our taxpayers and our community members means you've got to figure out different ways to do that. And so we put a mailer in and to share kind of our story about Oakwood Schools. We put together a state of the schools address that I hosted and at a board meeting, and we did some subsequent videos that came along with that. So if somebody didn't want to come and watch the 22-minute speech sort of thing that I gave, we chunked it into like four-minute videos, and so people could pull it off the shelf to get just a theme of what is Dr. Gupta and Oakwood Schools doing with creating a safe school environment, or you know, working on high student or high quality achievement. And so we've done a number of that. And then it led to now a strategic plan process we're working on. We've got a subcommittee, got parents involved, we've got students involved, community members, staff members from each building. And we're going through that process now of looking at our mission, our vision, and what are, I'll use the word big rocks of what we need to be thinking about. But to your specific question about how do you leverage innovation and creativity, first of all, I think that we put some phenomenal people on our committee that have some that represent parents and that sort of thing. But some of them have some tremendous background in the either education sector or in the business world that have this idea of where things are going. And they're doing some innovation work out in the, you know, outside of the school system that's helping to bring in, build in some ideas there. And then one of the conversations we really had was this idea about, you know, it's a strategic plan, right? It's not an operational plan. There's a difference between strategy and operation. So they'll maybe say things like, for example, we're right outside of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, a large base, and there's lots of engineers and pilots. I mean, it's the coolest thing in the world to just to be close to something like this. And I would say that our next thing is looking at is what is our STEM philosophy? What do we believe our STEM work is here? And it's got to be that hedgehog principle, right? We can't do everything. We've got it, but we've got to make sure we stay true to kind of, you know, what we fit. It fits in our, I guess, zone of what we think we can do really well. And but we've got to come up with that. And so we're going to go through with some research and some work, and we'll have some administrators and some staff members eventually get together to kind of look in and do some time investigating. Here's where I think people make a lot of mistakes. They think that that work should take a month, or they think that that work should take 2 months. True research and true benchmarking and making sure that you've got a good, solid plan should take about 5 or 6 months, if not more than that. So it's the idea of plan your work and then work your plan sort of thing. Don't skip out on planning your work and really doing it with due diligence so that you can make sure you build that. And then once we have that, we'll be able to share that with our staff, with our community, provide that proper training, and then we'll implement. But it's going to take 3 to 5 years to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dr. Gupta, the process that you are engaging your community in, it is lucid and intentionally designed and systematic to get to that process of where you're at right now, strategic planning. And to my audience and my viewers of VFE, the intentionality and the process of being systematic. Yes, I want to turn it back. If we could turn the camera back to Dr. Gupta, that is the whole process outlined. I tell you, Dr. Gupta, I have all of these visuals in my head going, and I'm trying to explain it. And then you got the right there. You want to talk about addressing the learning, adult learning styles, right? The various modalities with that. But the process that you went through from the community vision, right? Well, you not articulating your vision. I love that, right? Because that is the correct answer. And if I was a board member or a part of a governance structure hiring a superintendent, I would deliberately ask that question to see if a superintendent or a potential superintendent of a district or a leader are coming in with these preconceived notions or this vision without understanding the community context and dynamics. Amazing about that, Dr. Gupta. But what I love about it is that, again, going back to this co-design, co-creation, facilitating the thinking and articulating what the next steps are going to be, but you're only articulating what your constituents and stakeholders are saying within the actual vision process, as well as the strategic planning process. One thing I want to highlight that I love about this, Dr. Gupta, is that innovation and creativity is coming from, or it is being elicited from your constituents and stakeholders. It's not arbitrary. It's not more on the lines of, let me look at this hardware to redesign or to innovate around it. You're taking the collective thought process or thinking process of your constituents, stakeholders, and looking at your systems to innovate for creativity. And you have every stakeholder group represented it. Excellent. Excellent. I love that, right? Because again, when I think about some of the work that I'm engaging in is elevated to this portrait of a system. And Dr. Gupta, one thing that you're looking at, you're taking that portrait of a system approach and really level setting it with the voices of your community. Can I just say one word? Textbook.
There you go.
That is textbook, Dr. Gupta. But let's get into a topic that I think has really taken over the education landscape, AI, right? AI and education, technology and education. It's been a priority emphasis since the conclusion of the pandemic. I always say the DC stage of education during COVID-19. Because this new digital lever is It presents novelty, it presents a level of uncertainty. And now what I'm seeing is that we're identifying a multitude of different emerging technologies and softwares where there has to be that level of synchronization. I think that we're great with the discussion with AI. What does it look like from a transformative strategic integration synchronized with some of the traditional elements? But I know you speak about this all the time, Dr. Gupta. We even have some great conversations about this. What advice do you have for leaders regarding systems and school level change for successful AI transformation and integration? Not just software, not just tools, to me, that's kind of like the noise that's going to need it to drive the signals. But the signal around systems change and strategic integration with AI. What advice would you give the leaders for VFE?
Sure. I think it's that idea of, you know, just being careful not to have this quick knee-jerk reaction of like AI is bad and we got to shut it down and we got to turn on all the blocks and prevent it from coming in as if we have control over something like this. You know, I think there is that part right there. I think there is this idea of like at the same time, it's scary and it's cool. Like it's cool and scary at the same time. And so I think this idea of, and it goes back to this idea of co-creation and the idea of the journey together is, you know, putting together systems where you're inviting and working with staff, like through a book study, just to kind of learn about it. So picking a book about artificial intelligence, we're reading a book by Matt Miller right now and kind of going through that book study with staff members. And you've got some passion, you've got questions, you've got thoughts that are happening right there. And like, it's this idea of there's no one right answer. And not necessarily even trying to, I would even say we're trying to solve anything. We're just trying to just understand it and understand what are the different perspectives. And then, you know, at every meeting that we have, there's a new tool that seems to be like, hey, I stumbled across this new tool. So I think that, you know, that's the cool part to it. The uncertainty or scary part to it is, and this is something like I was watching one of our neighboring cities got hit with some ransomware. There was a cybersecurity attack. And I'm sitting there just watching the news kind of going, wow, this is interesting. And then they talked about cyber insurance. So I come back and said, what's our cyber insurance company? And how do we make sure that we're doing the things that we're supposed to do so that we're, if or when something happens, we're able to respond to it. And then so that I think that these ideas of parameters are things like, and especially being careful of the things that are out there that are new and free. Free sounds like it's a good thing, but when it might provide or create student information, when student information is being dumped in there into that free repository that could turn, if they don't have the right systems in place for secure security, that could put some liability on a school district. So our tech director and our curriculum director put out a beautiful email last week, and I loved that it was the same thing. It wasn't we hate AI or we love AI. It is this is the things you should be thinking about when you use artificial intelligence or what it should be or could be used for. So helping to create a lesson plan or reflect on a lesson plan or refine something. What you got to be very careful of, anything that asks for student information, that asks for, you know, those sorts of things. That was a very appropriate email that helps to signify to our staff kind of that balance that we need to be thinking about.
Yeah. And Dr. Gupta, that is, I mean, so vital, so critical, right? And one of the things, and we'll touch upon the strategies, but I love how you highlighted on privacy and security. And I think that's one of the major parameters that we have to be able to ensure that student data, district data is protected. And, you know, having this statistical background, analytical background, I know how essential that, you know, the importance of data and that level of privacy is a strategic imperative for any district. But I really want to highlight how you talked about this, you know, new tools, right? Various new tools. And sometimes I like to say this and educators get, you know, kind of like, look at me sideways when I say this, but free isn't always good. Mm-hmm. Right. And I always say that. And I love how some districts throughout the country now, they're regulating within their districts, they're regulating the amount of free tools that are being utilized because they're using, whether it be district ID codes or student ID codes from the district, which again, goes back to that privacy and security component of relegating information to unknown entities that are out there, which is so critical. But yes, love the aspect of the co-creation, right? And you highlighted what the education ecosystem polarity is between, yes, this is scary, but this is also cool. I think the next step that we have to take as an ecosystem, and you highlighted it, is what is this co-creation and the shared learning look like to ensure that there's a level of organizational coherence with AI and emerging technologies and generative intelligence into our schools in a strategic or a strategy manner that is synchronized within all the elements of our systems? I'm trying to push the landscape, Dr. Gupta, you know, around that, because we have all of these great tools, we have all of these great ideas, but now what does it look like from a continuous improvement, change management, classroom instruction to be aligned with Generation Z? That, my friend, is something that we are going to continue to unpack. I think that's going to be the next level of work or the nexus in the education ecosystem, is the strategy development and articulation around AI and different digital features. That digital transformation process is going to be arduous, but that's something later that we can handle, Dr. Gupta. We can't save the world in a day, like you said. But I want to challenge you a bit, because I want my audience, I want my viewers of BFE to unpack your genius mind around leadership, right? But I want you to define two words for me in the context of leadership in the AC stage of education. Define innovation and define creativity. And the reason why I'm asking this is that I was reviewing a study, and they gave the top 10 elements in education. And what I did was I did a kind of a visual causality analysis, nothing correlated, just looking at it, of where it connects to the levels of the business science world, as well as our natural economy, the economic demands. And the number one factor for that's going to be leading education is creativity. Down we saw innovation, then we saw analytics, and then, of course, AI. This was all in the top seven. But I want you, just for this purpose, define innovation, define creativity in alignment to effective leadership in the AC stage of education.
Sure. So I think it goes back to this idea of, like, you know, and it's not just all about jobs and careers, but just the idea of, like, just it blows our mind of, like, what is the world going to be like for our kindergartners that are going to graduate, and what kind of world is going to be for them when they graduate, or even by the time they get to be high schoolers. And then our high schoolers, what kind of jobs are there going to be out there? And we talk about the notion of that they don't even exist right now. And it just, you can't even, you know, comprehend it. So this idea about innovation and creativity, like, and I go back to STEM, for example, one of the things that I really want to make sure we understand is STEM isn't a thing you do. It's not a place you go. Like, it's not a classroom, and we're going to hire a STEM teacher, and the kids go down the hall to get STEM. It's right. This idea about really the vehicle of STEM might be that students are playing with some technology and doing some work around programming, or maybe they're you know, like I said, programming a robot to do a certain thing or whatever. But really, we're talking about these ideas of dispositions, and this gets the idea of creativity and innovation. Of students have to be able to problem solve. They have to think critically, work in groups together over a problem that may not be solvable, or that there is one right answer. And, like, you know, like, that's always the thing I worry about is when we say that, like, we've got this creative activity that we've created in our classroom, the ones that are truly creative, the teacher doesn't even know how the solution could happen, or that there's more than one right solution of how it might happen, you know, be solved. And really allowing the students to kind of, like, co-create, to find their way of what that might look like to do. And they're able to do that outside the box. And then the things that I want to make sure I'm cognizant of is where we're also taking away any parameters or blocks that may be dealt with by money, systems of money. I get worried about when all of a sudden, you know, students are able to bring things from home. And I'll say this, the wealthy kids are able to bring this back to school, and maybe some kids in poverty aren't able to bring that. And that's what is the decision maker of that. Like, I also kind of want to say that the parameters should be where money shouldn't matter, and that kids are able to kind of think through things and be able to do things. And they're able to do that from an equity standpoint. But the creativity and innovation are those thinking dispositions that allow students to be able to think about unsolvable, you know, things that may not be right away, that are necessarily constructs. We got to have 1 + 1 still has to equal 2, but yeah. They're able to do that in different ways.
Dr. Gupta, I'm going to expand on your answer, but I want to ask a sub question because you're absolutely right. And I love the notion that, you know, we think in dispositions, and the way you contextualized it, it is just beautifully, eloquently captures the AC stage of education, the development process, the instructional process for students of Generation Z, Generation Alpha, problem solving, critical thinking, working in collaboration, using technology. But I want to ask a sub question because it kind of goes back to the first question, right? When we think about this of thinking dispositions, problem solving, we're talking about new pedagogies that teachers have to employ. Again, it's the antithesis of teacher prep programs where we look at instruction. We have this over-reliance of direct instruction, not saying that it's bad. It's 0.6 on Hattie's high yield impact of the effect size of student achievement, but we have this over-reliance of it. And then now we're starting to see students, because we have Generation Z, Generation Alpha in our classrooms, and we use the dominant pedagogies of the BC stage of education, where students are not just at the strategic compliance level, it's this level of ritual compliance now, outright, what's the relevance for me, going back to that relationships, relevance, and rigor. Thinking dispositions, I love it. I don't want you to expand on that. I want you to take a look at how do we now change mindsets with regards to these new pedagogies so that we're able to elevate thinking dispositions. We're creating learning environments that's rooted on problem solving, critical thinking, and there isn't a binary answer. What we used to see, or what we still see in these benchmark assessments, summative assessments that have absolute percentiles. Please, Dr. Gupta, because as you can see, I went on a mini diatribe about this, because this is what we need, thinking dispositions in our students. How do we change the pedagogy in our classrooms?
There's tension. There's definite tension in what you're saying. And I'm just sitting there saying, I understand like where a little bit of this is coming from. But again, the true leadership has to come forward that kind of says, you know, what we manage matters sort of thing. And if we're sitting there and saying, I'm worried about our test scores on our state report card, and I'm worried about that, get those test scores up, then we're signifying to our educators, our teachers, to, I'm going to use the word, play it safe and teach to the test.
Right.
But
right.
It may not be those things that actually prepare our students for this idea of what's next in the world, and the idea about creativity and innovation, because then I'm really creating test takers. And, right. You know, but this idea, I know that comes up. But,
it came up at the appropriate time, Dr. Gupta.
I got to watch it. But this idea of leadership that kind of signifies to our staff, like, you're here to prepare our students for this idea. And I need you to I don't say not worry about the state test scores. You know, there's that idea of balance, but make sure you're trying to infuse that idea of students being able to think critically. And, so what does that look like? It might mean that we're going to spend a little bit more time in the idea of, like I said, group work. We fool ourselves when we say, like, man, if I'm teaching to a test, then I'm going to make my desks in rows, and my kids are going to be having paper pencil every minute, and we're going to drill and kill. But if I'm sitting there saying I'm preparing them for what's next, and to solve those problems that aren't even thought about yet, then I'm probably, my desk arrangements are different, and I'm you know, having kids do these things, and it looks really messy, and it feels loud, and the time kind of gets away, but it's a beautiful thing, because kids are become energized and engaged and that sort of thing. So there's that tension, and to your point, it happens at the collegiate level with teacher prep programs. It'll happen at the building level. It happens with the superintendent. If they're stressing the principals to say, get those test scores up, then they're going to stress out their teachers, and the teachers, it'll signify to the teachers kind of that play it safe. If we're in a place of doing that, then we've got to be able to say, gosh, like, I'll be honest with you, the tension is that I'm also then advocating at the state and national level. Like, I'm not just going to complain about it among my colleagues. I'm going to actually go to the state and national level and try to influence and try to have this positive change that says, let's actually measure the things that matter and the things that will actually prepare our students for it. And so I think that we, you know, I've been in classrooms where teachers have created those rubrics that allow kids to be challenged and assessed on how they take risks and how they I saw a student project failed. Their project failed, but the kids weren't stressed about it because the rubric wasn't set up for them to play it safe and actually solve it. It was meant for them to be innovative and creative. And so if your rubric is set up that way, then the kids will you know, drive that way. If you play it safe where your grade's based on the success of the project, then that's all they're going to get to. But I even was in a classroom and a teacher started out the classroom and saying that an English teacher had submitted her work for publication and it failed. And she's talking to her class about the critical feedback that the publication company gave back to her and how raw that was. Well, a couple things. She's modeling the idea of, you know, getting something published. She's an English teacher, so she's modeling that sort of thing. She's modeling not just the success, but also the you know, defeat sort of thing. And that idea of the revision process. And then we could play it safe where we tell our kids to write fake letters to somebody that never gets there. It never gets mailed. Or we're actually going to write letters and actually try to get responses back. And we're going to try to influence change that actually happens. Those are the things that we've got to bring into our classrooms. And I think maybe then that goes back to like the Bill Daggett rigor relevance relationships. That relevance piece does matter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Dr. Gupta, I was just capturing everything that you were stating. I loved how you expanded on that. I love the example of creative tension or tension. I like to say creative tension, highlighting the work of Peter Senge, that current state and that desired outcome. And that's, you know, we're still at some rudiments, you know, from the BC stage of education that I think are going to be legacy that will continue on. First AI century, right? We're in the second half of that. But this desired outcome of the pedagogies that we want to be able to see to elevate the thinking dispositions of our students. I always like to say, you know, there's the college ready, which is the initial construct of the actual system or the model of education. But I love how you're moving this in the examples you provided from career ready to digital ready as well. It seems like, Dr. Gupta, that your district is moving towards this, I like to say, apply lean practices. They're building, they're testing, they're measuring, they're getting feedback, they're learning from it, and they're going back and looking at the initial prototype for improvement. Wow, your rubrics are the example, your students saying, hey, wow, you know, we didn't do well on this, but what did we learn? Here's the feedback. How do we go back and reconstruct or address some of the gap areas? That process of being lean, the, I like to say, minimal viable product alignment is so great to that, Dr. Gupta. Really, you're moving your, I'm telling you, this is, I hope a ton of leaders and teachers are watching VFE. So that we can be able to have this synergy, this macro synergy, to be able to move some of the historical systems in education to exactly what you are highlighting, thinking dispositions. But last question, Dr. Gupta. You made it, brother. You good?
I got there. I made it.
Woo, you made it. I know, right? The rigor. I tell you, and Dr. Gupta, the funny part is some of the guests of VFB, they'll call me right afterwards. They're like, man, I felt like I was on a superintendent interview. This was harder than me getting my job, right? Supposed to be. But last question, Dr. Gupta, and I don't want to hold you to three words, but take it as it is. What three words do you want today's audience to leave our podcast with regarding impact and influence, specifically in the context of leadership in the AC stage of education?
Yeah, so I've thought about that. It's relationships, and I'll put that still number one. I hope, you know, that word's been said 50 times here, in here at least. And then the next two I would say would be, and I don't think they're the same thing, inspire and hope. I agree. Think that there's a lot of things that, I mean, we've kept it positive here. There's a lot of challenges in education going on right now. There are times where I'm wondering, why am I not running in the opposite direction as fast as I can? And I sit there and say, first of all, get around kids, get around students, and you'll remember your why right away. And I love doing that. But be in a place of every meeting that may not even go well, no matter what the conversation is, if you can sit there and say, how can I season this conversation with inspiration and hope, and that people can walk out saying, gosh, I walked in and with a certain attitude, but I'm walking out with a different attitude, and I feel that I've got that in there. You know, today, this morning, right before I came here, I was in an elementary building, and I was doing just a, you know, walking through classrooms and greeting our staff before the day started. And I that was in my head and my heart kind of the whole morning, was leave each person, because man, they're about to have 30 students come in their classrooms, and you know, how do you kind of offer that love and attention to them so that they're able to do that to our kids?
Absolutely. The three words that I think is so motivational: relationships, inspiration, and of course, that continuous hope. Specifically now, when I think about defining hope, Dr. Gupta, we are rapidly approaching, it's coming up next month, I believe May 21st, is the 70th anniversary of Brown v. Board of Education. And I always state that on the 70th anniversary, May 21st, 1954, have we had true progress, and have we eliminated what we've been fighting for historically since the Brown v. Board of Education decision? And I think that that last word of hope is what we want to continue to strive for, moving from, I like to say, the mountaintop to paradise, right? That's what we want to go, the promised land, I like to say. Relationships, inspiration, and hope. Dr. Neil Gupta, Superintendent of Oakwood Schools. If any of my audience members or viewers want to get in contact with you, have an extended question regarding one of your answers provided within this podcast, how would they be able to get in touch with you?
Sure, they can find me on, I've got a website, so you can get more blogs and information about me, where I'm speaking at conferences next, at farthertogether.org. And then I'm on social media. You can find me on X at Dr. Neil Gupta.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Gupta. Your leadership is inspirational. And I'll tell you, your Oakwood is very, very, very lucky to have you. The participants in your Principals Leadership Institute is very lucky to have you as a facilitator. And thank you for giving us the time on VFE, Dr. Gupta. Yes, we got
Great.
him.
Awesome. Love it.
Thanks a lot. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.